Coghill, Representative Holm, Representative Seaton, Chair Representative Wyrock, and we're joined at the table by Representative Petula. There's a large number of people here. I just wanted the folks to know who may be listening that there's audio streaming available in the Buttridge room, which is just upstairs in room 205 for the public hearing. And just on the outside table, people outside know that?
We have signs up outside.
Okay. We're going to hear a bill today introduced by Representative Holm, House Bill 327, but we're going to just take that up at the end of the committee hearing today. Near the tail end, I want to give the opportunity for Representative Holm to introduce that bill briefly. And I know there were a couple questions on getting some court cases for background for the committee members. And then we'll have you introduce the bill. And if Mr. McKinnon, if you could stay for that, and Mr. Barton, if you could stay for that. Okay, thanks. And but first, we're going to do an overview of Department of Transportation and Public Facilities lease or potential lease with Ketchikan Gateway Borough on a building to house Marine Highway System management personnel down in Ketchikan. For the record, we're also joined by Representative Gruenberg. Good morning, Representative Gruenberg. And there's quite a bit of interest here by people affected by that decision. And so I'm glad you're here, Commissioner Barton and Mr. Briggs, that you're here. What I'd like to do is have you both come up at the same time to the table so we can save time so not traveling back and forth. I just want to give some background first to the committee that this House State Affairs Committee has plenary jurisdiction over the Department of Transportation and public facilities relating to public facilities. That's why this committee is having a hearing on this. The public facility that the state has now houses the Marine Highway System personnel at what's called 3 Mile in Juneau, and this lease would have a new building, a public facility building down in Ketchikan to house personnel. So that falls under this committee's jurisdiction. We have also online, Jack Shea from the Ketchikan Borough. For the record, I had called Ketchikan Borough Mayor Mike Salazar to testify and participate in this hearing, and I think Mr. Shea is sitting in. But we'll have him online after we get the commissioner and Mr. Briggs. I want to also preface this by noting yesterday I appreciated that when the governor came to the Senate Finance Committee, he outlined several criteria, 8 criteria for establishing a fiscal plan in the state, and I think those are good words to repeat in the context of this kind of hearing, because he set forth some parameters that he wanted to consider when he was looking at the fiscal plan for the state and wanted the legislature to look at as well, and that is when considering measures that affect the revenues and finances and taxes in the state, to consider what the adverse impacts of loss of public services, if there's no resolution, will it have bipartisan support, is it basically fair to all Alaskans, is it good for Alaska, not only today, but in the future? And does it provide Alaskans the opportunity to have their say? And I think those kind of, well, not all of the points he mentioned, I think those are good analytic framework in part to apply to this move. And because there has been no hearing on this, formal hearing, this is sort of going to be at least the starting point. I don't anticipate at the end of a hearing on this. Give people a chance to at least hear what's going on. So we appreciate you're here, Mr. Barton, and Mr. Briggs, if you both could join us at the table, and if you want to provide that chair for them so they both can come up here, that would be great. Is there any comments or questions by the committee before we begin? Okay, thanks very much. If you could both identify yourselves for the record, and then I'll just ask you a couple of preliminary questions.
Certainly, Mike Barton, Commissioner of Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Tom Briggs, Deputy Commissioner, DOT, Director of Marine Highway.
Okay, so Mr. Briggs, you're the Director of the Marine Highway System. Okay, when you gentlemen talk, if you could just say your names for the record so it's clear for the audio portion of the transcript, that'd be great. I'm not sure who wants to start, but I would appreciate it if you would give a background of what the lease is, what we're talking about. The lease of the building in Ketchikan, why the state thinks it's in the public interest to have that lease, some of the background of what led to the decision to have the lease and to make the move, and why it's in the best interest of the Marine Highway System to have that lease on that building and move the people out of the personnel out of Juneau to Ketchikan to fill the building that the lease is having, and then what the beneficial impact is to the Marine Highway System and to the public, and what the cost is to the public. If you could go through that, that's a lot to cover, but if you provide that in a general context so we could start from there.
Sure, I'd be happy to do it. Mike Barton. As you point out, the governor has been very concerned about the fiscal situation. He's been very concerned about having the state operate in a better manner than it has, and more efficiently and more businesslike. It's long been acknowledged that having the shoreside management near the fleet provides for more efficient operations of the Marine Highway System, better opportunities to interact with the management with the actual operations. There's been studies that have identified that over the years. We think that this move will result in more efficient management over the long haul and better operation, better service to Alaskans, and help enable the Marine Highway to reduce the amount of general fund subsidy that it requires. In terms of the cost of the move, the estimates, I believe, range from about $340,000 to around $520,000.
That's the cost of the move?
That's correct.
I apologize. I neglected to indicate that Senator Elton has joined us in the committee room. Senator, you're welcome. You had indicated you had to leave. Okay. Sorry, Mr. Go ahead.
Well, that's the cost of the move. We do anticipate some savings as well, around $240,000.
$240,000?
A year, that's correct. Plus some additional as a result of the difference in lease costs.
Anything else? Or Mr. Briggs, do you want to pick up where Commissioner Barton left off?
Let me just add one thing, and that is that the Ketchikan Gateway Borough will reimburse the move costs.
Ketchikan Gateway Borough will what?
Reimburse the move costs through lease payment incentives. It will be reduced lease payments until the cost of the move is amortized.
They'll reimburse 100% of the move costs?
That's my understanding.
Is that your understanding, or is that exactly what it'll do?
I believe that's what the lease says. I don't have a copy of the lease in front of me. The lease has not been signed. We're still reviewing it. That was the intent of the lease.
Representative Grunberg?
Yes, thank you. Commissioner, when was the decision made to enter into the lease?
Well, the decision has not yet been made to enter into the lease per se. The decision has been made to move the headquarters to Ketchikan, but the lease itself is still under review.
When was the decision made to move?
I don't have a calendar in front of me.
May I ask you, was it before or after December 8, 2003?
It was after December 8th, 2003, yes.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner, were you involved in the decision, or this process, decision-making process in the beginning?
I've been involved since the discussion started, yes.
And the discussion started when?
Sometime last fall is when I think we were approached. involved.
Mr. Capaci?
He's the general manager. I don't know what others.
There were no formal discussions.
You have to say your name for the record.
Excuse me, Tom Briggs. There were no formal discussions with the employees.
Formal discussion. Why was that?
We hadn't got to that point yet.
At what point did you get to the point to involve formal discussion with the employees?
My task was to negotiate with Ketchikan a lease that was acceptable to the state, in the best interest of the state. And that I viewed that as being at no additional cost to the state than what we currently have. And acknowledging the efficiencies of having the shoreside management proximal to the major infrastructure in Ketchikan, the marine infrastructure, which is considerable. And it was my job to look at the lease and negotiate with the borough of Ketchikan the best possible lease we could come up with.
One thing under the Department Administration statutes, the lease provisions are carried under the general services folks over at admin. Did you handle these lease negotiations, or did administration?
My job was to negotiate with Tom Briggs. My job was to negotiate with the borough to get it to a position where they could make a formal offer. And there were several iterations, and they were unacceptable. And they wanted to approve a lease by March 1st. The last, most recent, prior to that time, lease proposal was received on January the 6th, I believe, by us. And I took that over sometime later, and I think it was probably early February, to a Department of Administration. And because they're the ones responsible for managing and administering leases. This was a proposal that was still at that time not fully endorsed by the Borough Assembly. There was never a formal proposal from the Borough Assembly until they acted on a lease that was had been turned over to DOA, and this discussion between DOA and the borough staff ensued, and I think that was probably the week before March 1st. They wanted to get it out for approval by March 1st because they wanted to expedite the process. So Department of Administration was dealing with the lease at that point, and they were in communication with the borough staff so that the borough staff could present a lease that came as close as possible to meeting the requirements of the state DOA internal requirements for leases.
But Mr. Briggs, my question was actually who was supposed to be involved with the discussions with the employees rejected the lease?
Oh, who was supposed to be? We were.
Who's we?
Myself and the commissioner, and down through the general manager. At some point we had discussed. We had also discussed I had approached Department of Personnel and requested for them to put together a team to, at that point, there was no decision on the move. It was a very preliminary process, in my opinion, at that time. I met with Personnel, Diane Corso and her staff, to put together a team to sit down with our employees and talk about if the decision was made to do the move, then they would have a question and answer period, and that was scheduled to occur the last week, but I was out of town the week of the 1st, well, from the 3rd on, and that discussion was and that chance to meet with the employees was preempted.
was no meeting before last week with the employees about this.
No.
No. Representative Bloomberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who made the decision to move the marine highway system to Ketchikan?
The governor.
Yeah.
I think it was Tuesday. I'm not sure. I think it was, let's see, Tuesday the 9th.
Of which month?
This month.
Then how was it that as early as September 25th of 2003, Ketchikan was submitting a proposal?
Ketchikan has been working for years trying to get the Marine Highway headquarters down to Ketchikan. As early as 1982, is my understanding, it had been suggested in several reports that it be moved down where it's closer to the work that's being done and subsequently closer to the fleet. There's been a lot of testimony over the years about the disconnect between management and the fleet. They were aware of that, and the people of Ketchikan, and they agreed. They are a highly developed marine industrial community. They have tremendous resources, and the shipyard, they have warehouse, they have a personnel, that both private and public sector personnel that deal in marine activities. They're also, that's where we have our layup of all of our vessels. This year, we had laid up, the Columbia was there for several months. Last year, the Columbia and the Aurora was there. At one time this year, there were three vessels in Ketchikan, the Columbia, the Matanuska, and the Kennecott, laid up for either layup or overhaul. They have a tremendous depth of personnel to be able to manage the type of marine industrial support systems that are needed. Ketchikan had realized this and has been suggesting for years that occur.
But why did Ketchikan want to expedite the process if it has been going on for years?
Because they wanted to get the people in there by this next year, is my understanding.
One of the things that, because you were negotiating the lease on behalf of the state, there was a Welsh Whitney Architect study that had been done of the Ward Cove Administration Building in February 2003, and it discussed existing asbestos issues and mold, the expanded windows that couldn't be opened, and that a hazardous material survey should be performed. Did you perform that survey?
The Welsh Whitley report, I don't think, talks about windows that can't be opened. I think that was in the Steve Flodine report. Our person that we sent down there at the suggestion of the commissioner from Anchorage to go down and take the report, review the facility, and make recommendations. Those were his recommendations.
Mr. Flodine.
Mr. Flodine. But let me speak about the asbestos. One of the requirements that DOA has in this whole process is that all of those, that there must be a complete hazmat survey, hazardous material survey, and they will be remediated if necessary before we will occupy the facility. So
what about before signing the lease? Will that be done before you sign the lease?
It'll be a condition of the lease, and that will be up to DOA. I don't know. They say they are requiring those to be done before they sign the lease. It's what the last thing that Vern Jones told me.
Okay, so is the hazardous material survey going to be performed before the state signs the lease?
That's a question for Mr. Jones, I think, since they are administering the contract at this point.
Commissioner Barton.
Mike Barton. The lease provides that, as I recall it, that the building meet all federal, state, and local laws and regulations.
But is a hazardous material survey going to be performed before the state signs the lease, Mr. Barton?
Again, that's a question for DOA. All I know is what's is in the lease, and that is that, that the building will be certified as safe for occupancy. We're not going to put our employees in an unsafe building.
Will you recommend to the Department of Administration that a hazardous material survey be done before it's signed for lease?
Sure. I'd be happy to make such a recommendation.
In writing?
Sure.
The other issue that came up in this architectural survey is that a structural engineer review the building because of the concerns on structural safety. Same question. Is the Department of Transportation going to recommend to the Department of Administration that a structural engineer do a survey before the state signs the lease?
I think those are things we need to discuss with DOA. Again, we're not going to put our employees in an unsafe building. Also in that report that says this is not unusual for buildings of this age.
I understand, but is it going to be your recommendation to the Department of Administration that it perform a structural engineering survey before it signs the lease?
That one be done. I don't know the Department of Administration.
That one
do
be
it.
Done. And your recommendation will be before it signs the lease that that survey be done?
Sure.
Not sure. Yes or no?
Well, I thought that's what sure meant, but yes.
Okay. The other issue that had come up in a SRI International study done in May 2003, because the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration had considered docking a ship in front of that area. Now, I understand there is shoreside power available to Marine Highway System vessels that dock presently at that site. Is that correct, Mr. Briggs?
Briggs, yes, it is.
NOAA, in that survey, had some concerns under the Comprehensive Environmental Response Liability Act, CERCLA, that acquisition or lease of the property of the site would make it susceptible to shared liability for on-site contamination unless an environmental due diligence assessment were performed. Has the Department of Law reviewed this for potential liability to the state of Alaska if hazardous substances are found either on-site or offshore, and what potential upwelling of those hazardous substances may be under CERCLA?
Tom Briggs, Mr. Chairman, no.
Why is that?
Because I was not aware of that report, and I'm just, you know, until it was laid on my desk at 7 o'clock last night by George Capazzi, the general manager, I was not aware of that, and I haven't had a chance to review it. He did say, well, you know how NOAA is. They're open to caution. And to me, it's no different than the situation at the Sitka pulp mill site, which is a former pulp mill facility that has been abandoned. And certainly there's activities going on the Sitka site. I'm not downplaying that report, Mr. Chairman. I had just never seen it until it was thrown on my desk at 7 o'clock last night. That's the first word I ever heard about that.
Well, you know, Mr. Briggs, one of the concerns that has been voiced to me and actually that I have is that this process has been so abrupt and hasty that this kind of information hasn't had an opportunity for full public information and available to the managers like you who really need to understand that, because it seems to me that if the state is potentially on the hook for significant liability costs for environmental cleanup at this site and the potential responsibility falls to the state of Alaska, that the potential financial liability and risk to the state of Alaska far exceeds any foreseeable financial risk now assessed by your department. Is that possible?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Briggs, now that I'm aware of that, I am going to take it to DOA. I know they're not aware of that, and of course we're going to do that. We're not going to do anything that would put the state in harm's way or our employees.
Will it also be your recommendation to the Department of Law look at this for potential liability to the state of Alaska under CERCLA?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Briggs, absolutely.
And it will be your recommendation to look at this before a lease is signed by the state?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Briggs, yes, I'm going to turn it over to DOA with that recommendation.
This is very helpful to me, Mr. Briggs. Obviously, this is a stressful situation, and I want to do this in as unimpassioned way as possible. But I want to get this information out so that both you, the committee, and the public is aware of it, and that we deal with it in an open way to deal with these issues.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that.
I don't want to hog all this. Is there any other members of the committee that have any questions? One of the representatives,
analysis from Information Insights?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, Tom Briggs. Yes, I am. In fact, that was part of the requirements that I had, we had, DOT had, that the consultant that did the discussion paper look at that and put his recommendations in the context of that and use some of those same assumptions. And that's what he did. And the report does compare and reflect those concerns in that report and how he suggested that they have been mitigated since then.
This report is fairly negative to the move, is it not?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, Tom Briggs. Yes, it's very negative. It shows that from a job opportunity standpoint, Ketchikan is very capable of providing a lot of support. It does, however, assume that we're going to build a new facility or rent unavailable at a current market rate and within Ketchikan. And this was all done before this other facility was available. If I may make a comment, my preference would be for us to have a facility, and I've said this before, at the shipyard itself, but that's not practical. We don't have the money for that. We have not put it into the CIP. But the facility within about 3 miles of the shipyard is available, and I think that the advantages of having the management close to where the work is done on our vessels and where the vessels are laid up and where a lot of the interaction with the crew can occur, which is my opinion, is not occurring now. I think that makes the use of this current site, which was not available for consideration in the 1997 study, worthwhile considering.
Briggs, one of the things that I think is important, that saving money is a key goal of, I think, I know the legislature and the public. One thing that this report by Mr. Dronker that had been made available to me finally just last week is that an internal AMHS analysis had concluded that travel-related savings could be approximately $39,000 per year, and that is the savings. We appreciate that. What is this internal AMHS analysis referred to?
About the 30, Tom Briggs, Mr. Chairman, about the 39,000?
Yes, sir.
It was just a document that was given to Mr. Dronker by admin services or HRM personnel, and I've got a copy of it here, which was a list of the expenditures and identified who did it or who the expenditures were for, and I suspect what the purpose for, yes. And that amount was $38,213, and this was for FY 2003, the Ketchikan Project Travel.
Rick, just as backup for this study by Mr. Drucker, could you make that kind of information available to the committee?
Absolutely.
We don't need to do it now. I mean, if there's all kinds of those kind of memos and things that are supporting this, that'd be very helpful to have.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Where does the Marine Highway System have work done on vessels?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, Tom Briggs, we have work done all over the country. The Ketchikan Shipyard and the Seward Shipyards both have a differential to allow work to be done. I think it requires all overhaul work to be done within our own state shipyards. The issue is, and we would like to have, personally, I'd like to have all of the work done within our shipyards within the state. We are able to require that all of the general fund expenditure, if it's a project that's exclusively general fund, that those incur in the state. However, utilizing with a high leverage federal dollars that we use for our capital projects, rehabilitation and upgrades, not just a general overhaul, that does require us to go out to bid. And the federal requirements are that there's a standard requirement that we put it out in an RFP, and that Right now, we have work. We have just completed work in the Tacoma shipyard for the Leconte. The two vessels that are the Kennecott has come out of the Ketchikan shipyard. The Columbia and the Matanuska is going into the shipyard, or the Matanuska has been in the shipyard for a major capital project, about nearly $6 million worth, of which at least 90% of that is federal dollars. No, not, yes, yes, they bid that competitively nationally, and they got that one.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, President, so about what percentage of the work is done at Ketchikan versus all of the other ports combined, including Seward and Tacoma, Seattle, and Portland?
All of the overhaul, Representative Seaton, Tom Bridge, there, all of the overhaul is done at the Ketchikan shipyard. Just the way it is. I'm not sure why we don't do it at Seward, whether they have the capability or not. I've been over to Seward and met with the head of the BOTEC there, and we're talking about expanding capabilities of Seward's involvement with the Marine Highway, and that's a work in progress, something we've got to work on. Shipyard work, I don't have an answer for you, Representative Seaton, but I'll get an answer for you.
Okay.
But as far as the rest, what percentage of capital projects that have to be advertised are done in the state, I would say 25%. That's just a guess. Right now we have two shipyards working on construction of new vessels, and none of those are in Alaska, unfortunately. I think the Columbia, should know this, and I apologize for not knowing exactly. I think the Columbia is on its way down to the Puget Sound area for a major refurbishment, but I can't be sure of that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to follow up because apparently it seems like the rationale for the move has been so that you're close to the work that's being done, and yet you're saying that 25%. Is all that's being done there. I'm also concerned because, you know, Seward is in my district.
Absolutely.
And part of the problem with Seward is that the there are subsidies that are given to Ketchikan. And so is the predominant reason for this move by Ketchikan to further subsidize and further advantage Ketchikan in the in-state leasing and the in-state requirements for the work to be done even within the state, and to provide further advantage for that shipyard, which is state subsidized?
Representative Seaton, Tom Riggs through the chair. That's a very difficult question for me to answer. The subsidy, no, the purpose of the move is not to further subsidize. So that's a simple no. The purpose of the move is, when I say the 25% of the capital projects is out of state, that is, up to this point, has been determined as a function of the ability of the shipyard to bond. As their bond rating is going up, they will be more competitive in some of the larger projects. All of the overhaul work on our 8 vessels that we currently have, and soon to have 10 vessels, are done in Ketchikan. So that's a significant amount, and that goes on throughout the year. The layup of the vessels has been determined, not by me, but by my predecessors, that the preferred layup location for all of the vessels when they're laid up, for whatever reason, not with either getting ready to go into capital construction or overhaul, or just because we can't afford to operate them year-round. The layup, preferred layup location is the Ward Cove area, which is the site of the former Ketchikan Pulp Corporation. There's a major dock facility there, and one of the requirements for And we tie to that dock now. We've had as many as two vessels tied to that dock at the same time. One of the requirements of this lease is that they put in more improvements into that facility so that we don't jeopardize our vessels when they're laid up against that dock. Right now, they're using what I consider to be, and the captains consider to be, an unacceptable situation. So one of our requirements is that they fix that. As far as Seward, I would love nothing more than to have more work done at Seward. I just don't know how to do it. And I'm too new at this, and I've got to try to assess that. I've been up there once, and I don't know what their capabilities are, I'm sorry to say, but I intend to find that out.
I'd like to follow one more thing, Mr. Chairman. I just want to find out if there's a commitment from you folks that this move is not going to be seen as an additional factor to say that the work should not be done in Seward and it should be in Ketchikan, because now it's close to and right beside the offices. And if that's, if that is basically what's behind this, is to shift additional work and additional vantage and on top of the subsidies and electrical subsidies and everything else for the Ketchikan shipyard, then I think we need to question the basis for the relationship of this to the shipyard.
Deb's in the seat and Tom Briggs through the chair. There are much more compelling reasons to have the shoreside management in Ketchikan than to increase this or to subsidize or enhance the shipyard. That's not our goal at all. And I have met with the director of the Votech Center, and I can't remember his name right now, about using their magnificent simulator that they have, one of the best, according to my port captain, one of the best in the country. And we want to expand into utilizing that simulator instead of taking our captains into other states to do simulation. And I think it is our commitment not to diminish the use of the Seward facility, but to increase it. And I would like nothing better than to be able to do overhaul and other work in Seward if it was possible. And I just don't know, and I apologize for not knowing what the capabilities of the marine industrial capabilities of Seward are, but I am committed to finding out. And I can assure you that this is not an attempt to bolster the shipyard advantage, if there is one, over the Seward shipyard. I'll guarantee that, and I would not ever support such a thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just a couple of questions back to the lease. In analyzing this lease and the desirability of entering this lease, it's always good, I think, in my limited experience, if somebody has bought property, to look at options and alternatives. What other alternative places did you look at for leasing other than the site that the Ward's Cove?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Briggs, none.
Is there some reason for that?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Briggs, I wasn't aware of any. It was offered by the borough as a facility, and my job was to review that, whether or not it the lease was favorable to the state, certainly not disfavorable, and whether or not the facility was adequate.
Were you ever directed to only look at that and no others?
No. Mr. Chairman, Tom Briggs, no.
President Coutu, I'm sorry.
That's all right. And I don't want to interrupt you.
You have to do that sometimes. My periphery is not good.
Whoa.
I'm not a big.
Thanks for being here this morning. How is the shipyard managed now in Ketchikan? Who manages it? How many people manage the shipyard?
Representative Kurtula, Tom Briggs through the chair. It's an independent company. I believe it's TIMAT, and I don't know much about it. It's some kind of relationship between the shipyard and ADA. I believe ADA owns the shipyard. There are no subsidies for the shipyard that I'm aware of. At least I'm not aware of them. But I think it's a contract from ADA with the corporation of TIMAT to operate the shipyard. That's as much as I know about.
On the state side, how do you interact then with the shipyard? Who here in Juneau then is responsible for dealing with that interaction?
Representative Curtula, Tom Briggs through the chair. The interaction with the shipyard is on a project-by-project basis, and that is our vessel construction managers and our marine engineers, port engineers primarily. They're the ones that interact with the shipyard. There is no other formal or informal link between DOT and the shipyard. DOT used to operate the shipyard. We got out of that business for whatever reason, and I'm unaware of that, several years ago. But I agree that the shipyard is a critical aspect of our industrial work effort, and it's been a great advantage to us to have that shipyard here in Southeast. As you remember, last year there were three incidents with our vessels that required use of the shipyard, and I was extremely grateful that we had, we all were, including the governor, was extremely grateful that we had that capability as close to where that activity occurred. You recall the Kennecott hit a rock in Wrangell Narrows. We had a fire on the Columbia they were involved in one of the generators. And we had shaft problems on the Taku. And they were able to deal with that themselves with their expertise. And they're continually building their expertise, as I'm sure Seward would be able to build their expertise if they had more work. And I think that, again, I'm committed to...
Mr. Breeze, you make a good point, and that is, it's important to develop the industries in the state of Alaska, and particularly those in Ketchikan and other areas of the state that don't have the kind of economic development that larger metropolitan areas do. And so this hearing should not be interpreted as any concern over that. We want that to grow and flourish. So that is very important. Yeah. Representative Curtula.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. My question is, if what we're talking about is trying to have the shore side, you know, next close to the shipyard and seeing the management, have you talked with the project managers to find out what the concerns are? How many people are actually necessary to do that? And finally, in one of the studies, albeit in 97, it's noted that, which is the second concern, is if you move people away from Juneau and away from the rest of the department's offices, then you're causing another problem. Have you studied that? You know, in terms of how many people are actually necessary and what the actual concerns are versus what's going to happen, let's say, if the whole division decides that they want to move out of Juneau. What happens here, then, with that interface with the department? And I know that's a series of questions, but what kind of look has been given to those issues?
Representative Curtula, Tom Briggs, through the chair. I don't agree with that report that says by not having management in Juneau that we've somehow damaged the efficacy of the fleet. I think the important thing, the one thing, if you recall the Acres report back in 1989, was very critical of the disconnect between the JCO, they call it, the Juneau Central Office, and the fleet. And in the 1997 testimony, Senate Bill 27, Senator Taylor's bill to move the headquarters down there. There was discussion, statements by some of the fleet that it would enhance the connectivity if they could move it close to where the work is being done, number one, and close to where there's a lot of, it's a change port just like Juneau is, but there's a lot of layup, there's a lot of interaction going on with the vessels in Ketchikan. That disconnect that I think overrides any lack of connectivity between Juneau and there. Certainly, part of the governor's plan is to decentralize a lot of the support services from the individual departments. We've been going through that. We've been struggling through that with HRM and IT and procurement. I don't see them being away from those people as being a problem, because most of our communication right now is by email or telephone.
Don't you use that to Ketchikan as well? That was another part of my concern. I mean, don't you communicate on a daily basis now?
I don't.
Thank you.
Mr. Briggs?
Okay. Representative Curtula, Tom Briggs, through the chair. I don't, and our people do. They talk to their VCMs every day, vessel construction managers and port engineers. To me, the really golden opportunity is to have our managers working and interacting with the fleet. And I think that one of the criticisms that I've heard since I've been there in the 1 year that I've been here is that there is a disconnect. And I think there's value in having them closer to where the work is being done.
I had one final question about that. And when you have a disconnect like that, wouldn't it be valuable to talk to the people involved to find out what the best way to resolve that is? I mean, sometimes it's not picking people up and moving them, it's figuring out how to communicate better. I mean, have you talked to your employees about how to resolve that disconnect?
Representative Katula, Tom Briggs through the chair, absolutely. Marine Transportation Advisory Board, of which I am the staff support, is very concerned about that. So concerned that they have put together a website so that the employees can communicate with the Marine Transportation Advisory Board members and through to the, I believe it even it goes to the general manager. We're very concerned about that. And the dialogue through email is one way of doing it. Face-to-face and spending more time on the vessels is the other way. Talking to the masters and the mates and the crew is the other way, and that's the way I would like to.
But Mr. Briggs, you even indicated earlier there hadn't been any meetings on this decision, a fundamental decision affecting every member of the people that would move, up until last week. How is that promoting communication? I guess the other thing is, it's a rhetorical question,
Mr. Chairman.
Let me follow up.
I understand your question.
One of the things you mentioned is Marine Highway System Advisory Board. Did they have a letter on this? Have they reviewed and approved this and given it their blessing?
Tom Briggs, Mr. Chairman, no.
And why is that?
Pardon?
Why is that?
Tom Briggs, Mr. Chairman, it was not presented to them. They were aware of the discussion. We wanted to, I was hoping to have an opportunity to go through this like we did with the moving of the home porting of the Fairweather. When our decision was to move it from Sitka to Juneau for home porting, which brought 38 jobs to Juneau, we had a lot of interchange. I went and talked to the community, and we had a lot of discussion and we gave our presentation of why it made sense to the MTAP, and they made their recommendation to the commissioner. The commissioner reviewed and talked to the community and went through an extreme dialogue. That didn't happen on this case, and I'm not sure why. It was certainly, we wanted to have an opportunity to have this without it coming out this way.
Mr. Briggs, if you're staff to the Marine Highway Advisory Board, you would know why. Your staff, you're responsible for putting their agenda together. Isn't that right?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Briggs, I assist in putting the agenda together. And there has been some, the chairman of the Marine Transportation Advisory Board had asked, are we ready to discuss this? Just as recently, I believe, as 2 weeks ago with the, and we said we're not ready yet because I hadn't received a proposal from, a formal proposal approved by the Borough Assembly.
But they had no input on the decision. Is that right? The board.
No, they did not, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gruber.
Thank you. Mr. Briggs, I'm not very familiar with the operation ferry system. We don't have too many ferries in Mountain View. But I do know a little bit about being at sea. I spent 2 years of my life in the Navy, homeported in Yokosuka, a port that's pretty far from Washington, D.C., and even from Pearl Harbor. And some of the same problems endemic in dealing with people in the fleet, the naval fleet, as dealing with people in the ferry system. And what they did was they put their managers from time to time on the ships themselves. These people are at sea most of the time. And you've got to catch them in port only from time to time. And if you really want to interface with them, why don't you go to them and go aboard their ship and spend time with them on their ship? See the conditions in which they work. Talk to them where they live. If you're serious about wanting to interface with them, why don't you go to them?
Representative Gruenberg, Tom Briggs through the chair, I agree with you 100%. I would, if it was it was possible, I would require all of our managers to spend a designated amount of time at sea. At sea, our vessels don't really go at sea; they're on an inside ferry.
Regardless,
path. But it's you're right, and we're not doing enough of that. And that's one of the things that we've got to get a lot better on, a lot smarter on. We've tried to put as many out there, but they apparently are overwhelmed by the amount of paperwork that the under the Homeland Security is just one aspect, the ISPS code and all the ISM codes and all the other federal requirements for reporting. It requires them to spend way too much time at their desk. I wish we could put them out on the vessel, and I hope to be able to do that in the future, but I haven't been able to affect that as quickly as I would have liked to. I've urged that, and it hasn't occurred, and I agree with you.
It seems to me that you have to communicate with the people in the ferry system, but you also have to communicate with people in the other departments and the rest of the Department of Transportation itself, and the support staff here. And if you're down in Ketchikan, that's going to isolate the system from the rest of state government. Isn't that an equally pressing problem?
Representative Gruenberg, Tom Brick, through the chair. I agree that it is it's a fact. Removed from it. I don't think it's a problem. It's been suggested that I remain here, and my support staff, which is my administrative services, and IT people, remain here also, in my relationship with MTAP, the commissioner. I think the benefit to have them down there is outweighs any possible isolation from being in Juneau. I don't see the benefit, the overriding compelling from a management standpoint of having shoreside management in Juneau. And if I'm missing something, I just would like to have someone set me straight, because I see advantage in being in Ketchikan.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
Let me just give you an idea. Just a few follow-up here, and then Mr. Briggs and Commissioner Barton, if you could stay here. We've got people that took a lot of time off their work. You guys get paid to be here, so set you aside, let these folks testify, and then have you come back.
I just have one more question. You said you've been on the job for about a year, but there have been people who've been on the job for many years, and a series of people. How much time did you spend talking to them about this move, your predecessors?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, Tom Briggs, I have talked to my predecessors. Let me think. The only one I talked to was Greg Dronker, who was assistant director and head of marine engineering for the Marine Highway System. Talked at length with him. George Capacci and I talked briefly about it on several occasions, and I've indicated to him that certainly no decision is made. It's a process that we're going through, that's all I talked to. I'm trying to think who my predecessors were, and I apologize.
Just a couple follow-ups, and then Representative. The captain of the port of the Coast Guard, are they living and working in Juneau?
Tom Briggs, Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that there are marine safety officers in Ketchikan.
But the captain of the port?
Captain of the port is here.
Is in Juneau. Are they playing? Speak your pardon?
I believe. I'm not sure.
You're not sure if the captain of the port for Marine Highway System for the...
Excuse me. I thought you meant for the Coast Guard.
For the Coast Guard. That's what I did mean. They are in Juneau. Are they planning to move to Ketchikan to accompany the management team for the Marine Highway System?
Tom Briggs, Mr. Chairman, I have no idea.
You haven't talked to them? What do they think of this move?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I haven't talked to them.
You haven't talked with them either. Then finally, there's been some concern expressed by the number of people who would be asked to move or forced to move to Ketchikan. If they don't move, how is the system going to save any money if they have to replace all the people?
Mr. Chairman Tom Briggs. I don't see our, it was never our intent to save money by losing people. I don't know. That was never our discussion. It's just a matter of, we feel that every one of them is a valuable employee, and everybody should have an opportunity to go, and if they don't go, then they will be replaced. But your theory, your hypothesis, if they don't move and have to be replaced, does it pencil out? Does it make sense to move if you have to hire new employees?
Mr. Chairman Tomberg, I have no idea what the cost of that's going to be.
No, we did not consider that in the analysis.
Okay. Quickly, Representative.
Yeah, thank you. I just had one other question here. I haven't seen or heard anything about the facility that is here in Juneau. What is the duration of the lease or the ownership of that, and what is the use that facility is going to be put to?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Briggs, Representative Seaton, the lease I know is until 2014. And that's the entire building.
2014.
And it is out at 3 Mile, and it's privately owned. BOA is responsible for managing the contract. So they are tasked with backfilling, as they call it, filling up that space. And I've been told that they estimate they have several months fill that up before it would cost them anything. And I don't understand how they've worked that out and figured that out, but it is their intent to be able to fill that up. And how they do that, I don't know. I would hope it, for the sake of the state, it would be new money, but I don't know that.
Well,
that's a DOA question.
I guess we just need to follow that.
We'll follow that up. Okay. Representative Paul,
just a quick thing. I wanted to mention, Mr. Chair, through the chair, that I noticed my good colleague from Fairbanks and myself, we're not soliciting for any of the work, and so we're not real knowledgeable in this field. But I would just like to ask a question, Mr. Briggs. Is your contention that this is an administrative proposal, that it's better for a better administration rather than saving money? Is that in essence what we're talking about here?
Representative Holm, Tom Briggs, through the chair, that is my contention.
Okay.
It's so close to being cost neutral that although the consultant indicated those things, it's so close to breaking even that I don't think it's a factor. I would never suggest that we move people in order to save the amount of money that they're proposing. I do believe that there are considerable management advantages in doing it, and that's my personal belief.
Surely. Well, just as a slight follow-up to that, as I understand, and I can just hear see the number of folks here as well, is it really in the best interest of the administration to do this at this time if it is not a significant difference in your administrative capabilities?
Representative Holm,
or can you make the case for a significant difference in your capabilities to administer?
Representative Holm, Tom Briggs, through the chair. I can't make the case right now. I know that the consultant has listed what he considers to be a whole lot of reasons for better opportunities for managing the system. I don't question those. I think there are more than that than what he has suggested, but I don't know what they are right now. He's identified some costs that are very, he calls them, they're not tangible actual costs, potential cost savings. But I urge him not to even put those in the report, because I don't think that they were, unless you can nail them down, and like you could the $39,000 for the travel, it would probably, he used a percentage of the total amount of layup and overhaul. He estimated saving 5%. How can he make a case for that? I don't know. It could be more than that. I just don't know. But there are other reasons about proximity to the infrastructure, the marine infrastructure of Southeast, that I think are a compelling argument for it. And I honestly believe that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you both, gentlemen. I'd like Pat Davidson to come up now. She had some analytic information for the committee, and then we'll go here to Jack Shea, who's online. And after that, we'll start here with the following in the following order. On deck, Bruce Patello. On the hole, Bob Dahl. And in the dugout, Jim Siepel and Faye Bain. If you could stand by and quickly come up here after Ms. Davidson and Mr. Shea, we'll try and move through this as expeditiously as possible. If you could identify yourself for the record. Mr. Brakes, you need to be here, please. And also, we'll get you a drink. Because, Mr. Brakes, essentially, if you don't have the chance to come up here, I want to be able to give you a chance to at least rebut anything that's said in writing. And I want you to hear it, so we're not impugning anything when you're not present. We can see your red face or your white face. Ms. Davidson, if you could identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Davidson with the Division of Legislative Audit.
Go ahead. We had asked for some information on the lease issues, and if you could identify concerns that you had raised about the lease.
Mr. Chairman, I had an opportunity to review the discussion paper prepared by Pacific Marine Technical Services in terms of some of the cost savings that were being discussed there. There were a couple of issues that I noted in terms of analyzing the savings between a lease in Ketchikan and a lease in the three-mile facility in Juneau. When you make those type of analyses, because there's unequal lease payments over time, they should be done on what we would call a net present value basis. That's the same basis that the Department of Administration General Services will use when evaluating alternative lease proposals. If you put it on a net present value basis, what you're acknowledging is if you're going to make a cost today and you're going to be recouping that cost through a credit incentive in the lease, and that's going to take 9 years to pay back, a dollar today and a dollar 9 years from now don't have the same value. So if you're going to evaluate those, put them on a net present value basis, you're going to have a dollar-to-dollar comparison. When you do that, some of the proposed savings are reduced. The second issue was with regard to whether making the comparison of the three-mile lease right now vis-a-vis the Ketchikan lease is the best representation for the cost difference, and that may not be the best basis because unless they can get out of the lease, unless they can backfill the lease by canceling out someplace else, you are incurring another lease payment. And so the true value of the two alternative leases isn't necessarily going to be the value of the three-mile lease. For example, if there's another lease space in Juneau for $1.60 per square foot, and those people, that lease is ending, and those are the people that are going to backfill into 3 mile, then your actual analysis should be on what lease space is given up. Alternatively, if you can, I'm not sure if the lease allows for it, but if you can sublet that space, the amount of money that you bring in should be the basis for comparing to the Ketchikan lease. So those are pretty much unknowns right now. So as you look at it, the information presented in that report at this point in time is only speculative.
Any questions, Ms. Davidson? Ms. Representative Bloomberg?
Yes, Ms. Davidson, you were only asked to look at, I understand from your testimony, that you were only asked to look at the lease issue.
through the chairman, Representative Grunberg, I was given a stack of documents and asked in a short amount of time if I could read through them and make comments on them. So I sort of focused on those areas that I knew the most about, which would be those types of things.
You looked mainly at the lease. Is that correct?
Representative Grunberg, I certainly found those areas to be the that I understood the best. But I would say my focus was looking at the Pacific Marine Technical Services report.
Representative Grunberg, I just wanted you to know that I had put those points out here. Response.
Okay.
That's in your file.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry if I'm not. How about the other costs involved, the other issues that we have explored today, which some of which have revolved around the lease, but others have very little to do with the lease?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything to say about those?
To the chairman, Representative Grunberg, originally my involvement came because there were requests made of the Budget and Audit Committee to do an audit. Right now, it takes anywhere from 7 to 10 months to get an audit started. Those type of issues, I would say, in my opinion, would take a full audit to evaluate, and therefore, I really can't make any comments on the other matters.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Any further questions, Ms. Davidson? Thank you, Ms. Davidson. Mr. Shea, I'm sorry to keep you there for so long. Are you online?
Yes, sir, we are. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. There. I'm speaking from Ketchikan. This is Jack Shea. I'm the former mayor of the borough and also the city currently on the borough assembly. I'm happy to say that I have here the vice mayor, because Mayor Salazar was not able, I believe he's in transit, not able to be here, but our vice mayor, David Landis, would like to speak first. Thank you, sir.
Well, Mr. Shea.
Yes, sir.
Can you consolidate it into Mr. Landis, or do you want to, I'll just give you an opportunity after him just to back clean up, if that's okay, because we just have limited time. But
okay.
I'll give him an opportunity. So, Mr. Landis, go ahead if you identify yourself.
Good morning, Chairman Wyrock, members of the committee. My name is David Landis, Vice Mayor of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. Mayor Salazar asked me to speak to you all this morning, and Mr. Shea is, with your permission, we at the Ketchikan Gateway Borough are prepared to welcome the Marine Highway System employees and the management of the Marine Highway to Ward Cove with open arms. I think it's a unique time for the state and the Marine Highway System to take advantage of a marine industrial area that has a very unique time frame window open right now. This is really the highest and best use for this property right now, and it's an industrial facility that can be used to and has been used to moor the vessels during the winter layup period. As has been mentioned extensively this morning, the Ketchikan Shipyard does a tremendous amount of business on a competitive basis with the Marine Highway System. And that we're very pleased that the numbers have worked out favorably to be able to save the state money. The last time I sat in this room was with you, Representative Wyrock, and Representative Grunberg, and Representative Williams, and Hawker, and several others. And we talked about the state budget under the auspices of the Ways and Means Committee. We talked in that session about the fact that broad-based solutions wouldn't be the sole way that the state could see their way through the collective budget difficulties, and that it would take small cuts and small revenue increases in order to make that work. This is one of those things, I believe, and I think that the mayor did a splendid job of negotiating with Mr. Briggs and others on the proposed lease. We certainly would look at any counter proposals, but hopefully those things have been worked out. I know there's been some discussion of that earlier. Finally, I'll say that this proposed facility in the industrial complex is a very fine building, structurally and environmentally sound. I understand the state has concerns, and we are certainly prepared to address those concerns, whatever they may be. But as a very, very long-term resident of Ketchikan, I grew up here, went through school here, and passed the facility in question several times a day for the last 35 years. It is a fine facility. I've had the opportunity recently to go through it. I was actually very pleased by the appearance, the fit and finish. It is a nice building, and I hope that we can get through this without too much further division. It does cause me concern that there has been division between two strongly associated communities of Juneau and Ketchikan, and I'm very pleased that we're looking at the cost and benefit analysis, and there's nothing other than that involved in this.
Well, that's for sure, Mr. Landis.
Thank you very much.
Any questions of Mr. Landis?
Thank you. So, from your point of view, this is the reason for this move is for cost savings to the state.
I believe it's twofold: the management advantages that Mr. Briggs spoke of very, very well and completely, I believe, and also the cost savings, which even when figured on an escalating factor, as was mentioned by Ms. Davidson, I think makes a lot of sense. It just makes sense. It's just like the movement of the home port of the new fast ferry Fairweather from Sitka to Juneau. That, although it caused a certain amount of job shift to Juneau, it made sense. And this similarly makes sense.
Mr. Shea, do you want to follow up anything?
Yes, sir. I'd like to point out that, to allay your anxieties, that we're talking about 43 to 45 positions, which is somewhat less than 0.3% of your workforce up there. Juneau is the only community in Southeast that's growing. Every other community is shrinking. When we take the Taku out of service and we deploy the new ferries up north, you will regain those positions, at least 40 of them and perhaps more. So as far as positions, jobs in the community, it's pretty much a wash. We've been working for decades to develop Ketchikan as a regional marine center. As far as subsidies go, there's no subsidy from the state for our shipyard here, which incidentally is operated by Alaska Ship and Dry Dock under a contract with ADA. The subsidies are furnished by the local municipalities. Both the KPU and the Borough Assembly have been, the Ketchikan Public Utilities owned by the city, have been encouraging the development of the shipyard. This move makes a great deal of business sense. This move means that the persons responsible for the maintenance and for the safety of the vessels are going to be right on site. And let me say also that the Department of Administration is going to do due diligence to make sure that everything is okay with the lease. We approved the lease by a unanimous vote of the Assembly. As a matter of fact, at one point there was a possibility of going into executive session, but an extremely intelligent, astute journalist reminded us that might not be favorable. If we would have gone in, we may have got a better deal, but I think the state really got a good deal on this one. We're going to fix it up. We're going to make it as fine as we can for all those wonderful employees that will come down. And in regard to good honorable Kurtula and Wyrock and Elton, we understand that you have a responsibility to your constituents. We understand that fully. But you also have a larger responsibility, and that is for the region, because under any kind of redistricting or reapportionment program, I'm afraid we're going to lose some representation. We need to work together, our communities in Southeast and in Juneau. We believe that this is a very fine move, and we hope that you can support it. We don't want to create any adverse impact on employees, but it certainly will enhance the system and enhance the efficiency of the ferry system. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Shea, and we're all interested in doing the right thing. Mayor Bruce Patello, followed by Mr. Dahl and Ms. Siepel and Bain. All of those of you present, I can tell you right now you're not going to be able to testify, but we will take public comment on this, and if it's so overwhelming, we may have another hearing on this. And I think I will have a hearing to follow up on the questions that we asked the commissioner anyway, and Mr. Briggs. But Mr. Patel, if you could give us your name and address for the record and your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bruce Patel. I reside at 401 F Street, Douglas, Alaska, and I am here in my capacity as mayor of the city and borough of Juneau. First, let me thank you, Mr. Chairman, for convening this hearing on the question of relocating the Alaska Marine Highway System headquarters from Juneau to Ketchikan. My testimony is really in three parts. First, I'd like to speak to you about the standards you have set for the system, and I think specifically for evaluating the wisdom of this proposed move. Second, I'd like to address what I consider certain of the myths that surround the proposed move. And finally, I'd like to suggest certain actions that I believe you as the legislature should take. Mr. Chairman, I know that you're an active Rotarian, and I have always been impressed with Rotary International's test in examining issues. The so-called four-way test of the things we think, say, and do is the questions to ask. Is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? Will it be beneficial to all concerned? Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest that the four-way test is a good model to apply here, but as I mentioned earlier, the legislature has its own four-way test, which it has adopted expressly for the Marine Highway System. When you examine your emissions and measures for the system, and in particular look at AS 1965-050, and again, I apologize, but the lawyer in me brings me to look at statutes. These are the questions, your four-way test. Does it encourage prudent management and operation of the system? Does it reflect cost management and accurate budgeting? Is it consistent with the public interest and sound fiscal policy? Will it achieve stability in the level of service? Mr. Chairman, I would urge you and your colleagues to apply these tests when evaluating this proposed move to Ketchikan. And that brings me to what I've kind of described as the four myths of moving the Marine Highway System. Myth number one, that the decision to move the Marine Highway System headquarters was the result of a deliberative public process. This is the first public hearing, either by the executive or legislative branch, about the proposed move. We are told that the decision, which was originally to be subject to some process that would involve both employees and the communities affected, is now final. Yet other than a discussion paper for which the state paid $3,750, there is no foundation for this decision, which radically alters the management of the Marine Highway System. Myth number two, and a myth that I think was shared again today, that the decision to move the Marine Highway System headquarters is supported by expert studies over the years. There's no doubt that there have been efforts over the years to suggest that the move take place. I can tell you that in my service during the Hickel administration, that proposal, it was specifically offered and rejected by management. We've heard reference to the Acres report, but let me point out that it was not a study about whether the Marine Highway System headquarters should be moved. There's only been one study that really has been in depth that has addressed the question of potential relocation of the Marine Highway System. And that was the one prepared by Information Insights in 1997, the reference earlier by the chairman to the March 15th, ironically, exactly 7 years ago, to move. Let me quote its conclusion. The top-level employees of the AMHS are the individuals who most need to interact with the legislature and other DOTPUF administration offices. Movement of their offices would create significant problems in the operation of the system. The discussion paper upon which the deputy commissioner has based his recommendation to move the headquarters only concludes that, and I quote it, there is merit in relocating fleet management and engineering staff to Ketchikan. But the recommendation in the discussion paper simply suggests that a project team be established to advance the issue. And in a footnote in that discussion paper, it makes clear that its only source of information respecting the proposed move came from the department for whom the discussion paper was prepared. Brings me to myth number three, that the move makes good sense for the Marine Highway system. As I think has also been elicited in the testimony you've received already, the discussion paper fails to show any meaningful savings. It does suggest, and the Deputy Commissioner reiterated the point this morning, that somehow communication between shoreside employees and the fleet would be improved. But there are no facts to substantiate that conclusion. The fleet is in constant motion, as Representative Gruberg pointed out. 10 ships are never tied up alongside, ready to be managed. And as I think Representative Seaton has also reminded us, some 35% of the fleet personnel are not located in Southeast Alaska, so they would be unaffected in any event. But more important to this myth that it makes good sense is the fact that one would expect that any management analysis would begin by identifying the primary interactions between the Marine Highway leadership and others, what is sometimes called the community of interest. Who are the players with whom they have to deal on a daily basis? Who are the and what are the institutional connections that are key to the viability, indeed the survivability, of the system? And here the answers are very apparent. They're the top policymakers of the state. They are the Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities who must champion the system. It is the governor. It's the legislature who sets the policies. It's the state agencies who support the operations of the Marine Highway System, the Departments of Administration and Law, both again referenced in earlier testimony. It is the federal agencies whose key personnel are in Juneau. The captain of the port, Commander John Sifling, and his staff are located here in Juneau, and other Coast Guard officials. It's the Federal Highway Administration, whose dollars make up the greater portion of all Marine Highway construction. And that brings me to the fourth myth. The loss of headquarters will have a negligible impact on Juneau. And I must say, Jack Shea and I have been good friends for more than 30 years. We first came to know each other when I lived in Ketchikan. But I respectfully disagree with his suggestion that somehow this is a move that would be easy for Juneau to absorb. According to the Juneau Economic Development Council, the direct and indirect loss is in excess of 70 jobs and an annual payroll of $3.8 million. That is not an inconsequential loss to Juneau, and it would not be to any other community, large or small, in the state. I believe it would be financially and symbolically like moving the university administration from Fairbanks to Anchorage, or moving the headquarters of the Alaska Railroad Corporation from Anchorage to Seward. And Representative Seaton, I don't want to plant any ideas here.
I didn't like your first idea, sir.
Let me say, though, that the financial loss doesn't account for the other loss. These are our families. They're our friends. They're our neighbors. These are the little league coaches in our community. They're the Sunday school teachers. They're the volunteer board members of the hundreds of volunteer organizations we have in this community. They're the people who individually and collectively make Juneau a richer place to live. Mr. Chairman, we're not on a lifeboat adrift on the high seas without food and water. We're forced to prey on one another in order to survive. What needs to be done? Mr. Chairman, I urge that the legislature seek to delay implementation of this decision to move the headquarters until there is an analysis incorporating the following elements. And again, I think perhaps we have a commonality with Ketchikan, David Landis' comments about looking at the cost-benefit, but that we look at the following elements. Identification of the economic and non-economic impacts on the state and the employees affected by this move. The operational impacts of the move on the system itself. And the economic impacts on the communities of Ketchikan and Juneau. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify this morning.
Any questions, Representative Grunberg? Thank you. Mr. Mayor, your last comment strikes a chord because I believe that Representative Wyrock and I have talked about a similar theme in a slightly different context. Your community and actually my district recently lost Kmart's, and several other businesses have left your district, and same with mine. And my office has done some research on the Plant Closure Act and the impact of that kind of thing on the community and what we have at the state to look at that kind of a situation. I'm not aware whether there's any state legislation that requires a similar examination and protection of workers when a state agency moves. And what you have suggested is an analytical framework for doing so that goes beyond the movement of this office from here to Ketchikan. And you said, well, what happens if the university moves or the railroad moves or another agency moves? It's the same issues and the same kind of analysis. And maybe it's time that the state had some legislative framework to require the considerations. We have an environmental impact requirement under federal law, actually. There should be maybe something similar when a state agency moves. Do you have any comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, certainly in this context, I think it is healthy for us to know what the impacts are of the actions taken by government, particularly when they are as monumental as these are. Again, in both this and there's been reference to the decision about locating the Fairweather, I think we've been consistent as a community in terms of what we think the threshold case is, what makes both sense for the system as a whole. We recognize that there will be occasions when we will lose, but we want it to be the result of rigorous examination about what makes most sense. Juneau did not campaign to have the Fairweather relocated to Juneau. It did not make any effort to lobby the administration with respect to that move. The only position we took was do what makes most sense for the system as a whole. And that's the test that really needs to be applied here. It should be a test that takes place whenever state government is contemplating the kind of action that is being suggested here.
Mayor, please submit your testimony for the record.
I would be delighted, Mr. Chairman.
We have a couple other folks. Mr. Dahl, forward. And then Mr. Siepel, if you could be on deck. And Ms. Bain. And I want to try and stay true to my word and adjourn this oversight at 10 till and then recess at ease at 10 till and then do the one bill before us for the final 10 minutes. So everybody keep that in mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Dahl, and I live in Juneau. And I am the executive director of an organization called Better Ferries for Alaska, which I'll describe shortly. I'm also a retired captain in the United States Navy, where I served in cruisers and destroyers and spent the best years of my life in Yokosuka, Japan. I hold a U.S. Coast Guard license as Master Oceans, Any Gross Tons. I've sailed aboard U.S. flag merchant ships in the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans, and have served as master of a merchant ship. I was general manager of the Alaska Marine Highway from 1997 to 2000. Better Ferries for Alaska is a coalition of organizations which have as their common interest the enhancement of our ferry system and the improvement of the service that it provides to our coastal communities. Our concern this morning is that a decision with serious impacts on the AMHS is being taken without adequate consideration. We might be prepared to support a headquarters move if it were based on a thorough, professional, objective analysis of the proposal. Since such an analysis has not been conducted, we recommend to the administration and the legislature that no steps be taken to implement the proposal. The only effort toward a review of the move is, to date, is the form in the form of an 11-page discussion paper. Unfortunately, we believe that that discussion paper is totally inadequate. What are its specific deficiencies? Well, to begin with, it has no stated objectives, no time frame, no statement of costs to be avoided or benefits to be gained. Is the move intended to improve operations or produce better maintenance or to save money? The discussion paper addresses all of those topics and more, but it sets no priorities among them. Which motive is dominant? What is the time frame in which those effects are to be achieved? It may be that the objective is to assist the economy of Ketchikan. If that is the case, then why go to the trouble of searching for other justifications? But without a clearly stated objective, the discussion paper cannot objectively evaluate the options available. The paper also fails to demonstrate any savings. It completely overlooks or avoids the fact that the space occupied by AMHS here in Juneau is in a privately owned leased building. That lease has only recently been renewed. The cost of that lease will not be reduced if the Marine Highway vacates the space it now occupies. Rather, the cost of leasing space in Ketchikan, at a minimum of $773,000 over 10 years, will add to the state's O&M budget. It is difficult for us to understand how the leasing of office space in Ketchikan, at any price, can be considered a savings. In a similar vein, the discussion paper simply asserts that $240,000 per year will be saved in layup and overhaul costs. That figure was apparently derived by simply taking 5% of the annual expenditure for layup and overhaul and declaring that it will be saved. The author is careful to note that this amount is not being advanced as an absolute, but rather as an opportunity for savings. He does not describe how that opportunity will be realized, nor how locating the Marine Highway headquarters in Ketchikan will contribute to that outcome. It would be wonderful if the state could solve its fiscal problems in that way. Excuse me. We can only conclude that the saving of $240,000 a year is fictitious. The discussion paper refers to some $39,000 per year which will be saved in travel, citing an internal AMHS analysis. And I had not prior to this morning seen this analysis. And I think the committee should be made aware that of that $38,000 or $39,000, $31,000 was paid with federal funds and would always be paid for federal funds when a ship was undergoing a federally funded project. Also, parenthetically, I should say that in this discussion of the Fairweather versus the Taku, the committee should be made aware that Fairweather will have about one quarter of the crew of the Taku, somewhere between a half and a quarter of the crew. So that's not a straight out exchange. If the committee does the arithmetic on the numbers I have quoted from the discussion paper and includes the estimate of the author's $400,000 to make the move, I believe the members will conclude, as I have, that there are no credible savings achieved by this move. Instead, the state will pay $400,000 to make the move, face a CPI adjustment to the cost of the lease after 6 years, and potentially be faced with interior renovation and hazardous material abatement costs of an undetermined dollar amount.